Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations and joins us for a weekly update here on this Friday morning. I remind you that there will be no weekly update next week due to our travel schedule, but Mr. Honlein informs me that he will be spending next Friday night at Parkey Synagogue in New York City. Malcolm, welcome back to JM in the AM. What will be your topic next Friday night?
Everything I didn't tell the people in the morning on JM in the AM.
So now anybody who needs to hear it has to walk from near and far to be part of the action.
Yeah, so if they leave by Thursday, they can walk to by Friday afternoon in New York.
Practically from anywhere. All right, so I'm sure it'll deal with current events and the news of the day, that we have to assume. Speaking of news of the day, we know the holiday of Hanukkah has just concluded. And I always feel it's important to toss in some good news, but I'm sure you felt quite a charge when you heard the news that a Hasmonean-era structure has been found in Jerusalem. And from what I read, it was the first time something from that era was discovered in the Holy City.
Exactly right. And it's over 2,000 years old, clearly, the structure in place, and it indicates that perhaps there will be more, but as we always say, these things are messages also that are reminders to us at a time when people are worrying about the generation distancing itself. In part, it's because we don't talk about these things and give them the roots and give them the association and identification, which is so incredibly valuable and important for us. And, you know, that I know a lot of people don't like when we get, quote, lost in history, which we don't do. We look at history as a guide, and what could be more relevant than this week, the 75th anniversary of the Kinder Transport,
right,
and reading the stories of the people as a reminder, and that England at least opened the door to 10,000, but 1.5 million other children who could have been saved, Jewish children, were not. And even the Kinder Transport met resistance, and some of the families after the war did not give the children back. And there's so much to learn about it at a time when we face serious issues. The past gives us some a way of perspective on understanding it and being able to deal with it.
Some people focus too much, some people not enough. As you always say, we need a well-balanced attack, and that includes a comprehensive look at our history. All right, so we learned of the passing of Nelson Mandela, and I read some fascinating things online, specifically from the Jerusalem Post, regarding his relationship with the Jewish community of South Africa, and that the first job that he got in the field of law as a clerk was actually with a Jewish law firm in South Africa.
And Jews were his lawyers in his during the years of his struggle, and he had a somewhat mixed relationship because of some of his positions regarding Israel, but his many of his closest associates, and I had the privilege to meet him when he visited the United States, and his wife, when we took the President's Conference to Israel a few years ago, his wife came to the event at the synagogue and spoke very warmly and brought a message from him. So no doubt he was one of the great figures of the period, despite the fact that he may not have been on the right path on some of the Middle East issues.
Yeah, I mean, and we know, of course, how many of the how many misguided people out there use the word apartheid when it comes to the Israel-Arab relationship, and he being the symbol of apartheid coming down. I guess if he in fact did want to take a pro-Israel position in the Middle East, it would have been a very delicate one.
You know that almost half the American people, when you ask them this question, will say that, in fact, Israel is an apartheid state until you start asking them, and there is no analogy, and the South African Jewish community is, in fact, producing now a whole major study, a major effort geared to this. But this week, the American Studies Association passed a resolution that would boycott Israeli institutions and universities. And they're now subjecting it to the vote of their more than 5,000 members. So anybody who knows anybody who's a member of the American Studies Association have to make sure that they vote against this really outrageous and horrific measure at a time when Israel, you know, it's like the UN resolution condemning Israel for its treatment of Syrians. This annual, one of the annual spate of resolutions that just passed automatically, when Israel's the only country that went in there, is doing what it's doing on the borders, saving lives with hundreds of lives, with the medical clinics they've set up and taking people into the country and doing aid both to refugees in Jordan along the Turkish border and across Israel's border, sending in huge amounts of relief into rebel-held areas for the refugees there.
It's amazing how the State of Israel has it in its blood to simply reach out and help those in need.
And there's certainly no credit to it. There's no benefit to it from it. It's done for the highest humanitarian and Jewish values.
I apologize for going this early in the conversation to local issues, but just two quick things before we move on to what I would guess would be the lead story for us. First is there's a New York City councilwoman-elect who reacted to the, what did he call the knockout attacks that are happening in New York. Those of us who are in this area certainly know what I mean. I think folks around the world have read about it as well. And she said that blacks feel threatened by the growth of the Jewish community, and therefore that it's a direct correlation to why we see this violence against Jews more than others. What's your reaction to that statement?
Well, the first thing is that because somebody gets elected, it's not a sign of intelligence or understanding, and that too many times we see those, and there are other politicians from the same area who have made careers of baiting the Jews and trying to rally the troops and gain support, not by their accomplishments, but by the animosity that they breed. And this is a reflection, I would hope, not of a personal venom or attitude, but of ignorance, saying that they are threatened by the expansion of Jews. It frankly brought to mind Jackie Mason's, famous routines about, whoever crosses the street could say, uh-oh, look, here comes some yeshiva boys.
Right.
Get out of the way, they're scared. But this kind of insightful statements, and we heard it, I remember when, in regard to Williamsburg, we heard the same thing in regard to other situations, that the people who legitimately buy, they're not forcing people out of their homes, they're not doing anything to them, and that becomes a justification for these horrific attacks, which, by the way, are going on in many places and even against non-Jews.
Right. Also, you've pointed out to us so often over the last, 12 years already. I don't know. What was Ray Kelly commissioner for the entire three terms of...
I was trying to think about that last night. I don't remember, but he certainly was there for the vast majority of it.
And you have always pointed out how he and his leadership in the NYPD was not only a key when it came to keeping crime statistics down in New York, but key to keeping terror activities at a minimum or at zero, please God, in this area and in so many, and even affects other areas of the United States as well. With all that in mind, what do you think of the appointment or the announcement that Bill Bratton would be the next police commissioner in New York City?
I think Bill Bratton's an extremely capable guy. He's proven his leadership abilities. He has, he's very strong on community policing. He was commissioner in L.A., had a close ties to the Jewish community there and here. I know him and respect him a great deal. I think Ray Kelly deserves all the praise we can give him. His planting of people around members of the police department, representatives in many countries, including and almost first in Israel, to share intelligence, to get information, put the New York Police Department way ahead of many others in counterterrorism efforts in addressing what is really a priority issue for any police department today because of the globalization of crime and the transit of people, and particularly to a city like New York, which is a global city. So his efforts in recruiting people, he heads an army in the department, and I think that it'll be a smooth transition to Commissioner Bratton, who has a long history here in New York as well. People forget, although he's from Boston originally, that he served here as well.
So no reason to suspect that he's any less terror-conscious than Ray Kelly was.
Oh, no, quite the opposite. I think he will retain that focus. He's even said that he supports stop and frisk, but should be done constitutionally. So this is not some weak-kneed person coming in to be commissioner. He's somebody very intelligent, with vision. I think Ray Kelly proved to be a remarkable commissioner, and that his contribution will be long-lasting. And I think we will see the record in terms of dealing with crime continue under a Commissioner Brandt.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, around the world on the web, jmnam.org. Just want to note one more time that Matthias Weingast will be speaking with the Chief Rabbi of South Africa, Rabbi Goldstein, at 8:30 in the morning this coming Sunday on our stream, part of JM Sunday at jmandtheam.org. Malcolm, the Jerusalem Post says the following today. The John Kerry that Israelis saw deliver a statement to the press following his meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu Thursday was not the John Kerry they saw a short month ago in a joint television interview with an Israeli and Palestinian journalist. That Kerry, the one from that interview, was the Kerry threatening Israel with a third intifada if the talks with the Palestinians collapsed. That was the agitated Kerry who lectured about the settlements, pretty much placing the onus for a lack of movement in the talks with the Palestinians on Israel and warning that a peace agreement that was not reached, that if a peace agreement was not reached, Israel would face increasing isolation. That was the Kerry who said, Israel says, oh, we feel safe today. We have a wall. We're not in a day-to-day conflict. We're doing pretty well economically. Well, I've got news for you. Today's status quo will not be tomorrow's or next year's. Thursday, Kerry, at least the one on display alongside Netanyahu, was completely different. Nary a word about the settlements, not a word about a third intifada, not a hint of his I've got news for you. He says on Thursday, he was all smiles, called him my friend Bibi, said he had a deep understanding of Israel's security concerns. Is there a difference in the Secretary of State from a month ago to today?
Well, certainly the statements were different, and a lot of things have happened in the last month. I think maybe those who believe that they can pressure Israel or Netanyahu into a different position have learned, and he has repeatedly said that even when the opposition came internally, that I'm not going to do anything that will sacrifice the security of Israel. He sees this as the primary challenge to Israel's security, certainly externally, and a regional threat. I think that his role in putting this issue at the forefront and sustaining a tougher position in dealing with it, even if we feel that much that's in the agreement is not strong enough, I think that that Kerry, with whom I met, as you know, and reported several times on the discussions in the last weeks, I think that is facing the reality, number one, that we're dealing with a partner who, i.e. Iran, who is not really ready to make the commitments. We see all the statements by them about red lines. We see all of the hedging and already backtracking on some of the statements. And we're learning much more about the agreement. That's one of the things that is very, in part, disturbing, is that much of what they said, or even what Secretary Kerry at times said, we're finding that there was more to the story, such as the fact that the agreement doesn't really kick in because they still have to have an implementing agreement, and it's not likely till mid-January that the six-month period will begin. What is good about that is that the IEA has to verify in that time that Iran has actually complied and has begun began the process of meeting all the requirements, including the transparency, the stopping of enrichment at the current levels.
I mean, it sounds like you're almost saying what the author of this Jerusalem Post article is saying, because he's emphasizing how, you know, Kerry now is talking about visiting Kiryat Shmona and seeing children hide from rockets and understands Israel's security concerns and taking cover from Gaza. He writes, what happened was a bad month in U.S.-Israeli relations, a month where everybody, including Iran, saw fundamental tactical differences between the U.S. and Israel. Is that what it is? And by the way, this to me is good news. If this is how the U.S. reacts when the U.S.-Israeli relations are rocky for 30 days, that to me is good news that they come back with this.
Well, in part it is. I am very unhappy about what the public tensions that existed, because the truth is we're on the same side. We want the same thing to come out of it. The question is how you get there and whether the road that was chosen is the appropriate one. Netanyahu was disappointed in the agreement, I think in part because there were things that he didn't know about the backdoor channels that were going on, as did the Europeans not, and felt that the deal did not address the Security Council resolution demands of dismantling, and felt that the Iranians got too much for too little. the administration's position is that everything is that was given is reversible, and it's small in comparison to the totality of what the impact is, and that it really does, at least for the time being, stop them at this point. But we know that their history of cheating and lying and obfuscating really puts this whole thing in question. But it'll be monitored, and if it's monitored right, and that's why the implementation period is so important, also why we believe the sanctions legislation is so important, even if it's implemented in 6 months, so that it's hanging over the Iranians, who are doing everything possible now to create the impression, at least, that, you know, the sanctions are moving back and that there's new opportunities and you can come and invest or you could do stuff. The rial went up 5%, the currency of Iran, even though it's down, you know, 40-50%. They will lose another $100 billion this year in the sanctions that all remain in place with the selected areas, including, like, auto parts. But the auto parts deals was the cover for some of the nuclear and ballistic dual-use material getting into Iran. So we're at a very critical stage, a very complicated stage. Secretary Hagel is also in the area trying to reassure the Gulf countries. Secretary Kerry statement that Israel can defend itself by itself, and, you know, going back to some of the language that we heard before. I think that
See, the aftermath, though, of this deal could have caused so much more international isolation of Israel. This move, if done purposely by Kerry, sort of brought Israel back into the fold, into the community of nations, because the U.S. could have taken the exact opposite approach. You know, Bibi wants to be so hardline, so Israel, you're on your own, and it didn't react that way.
Well, I think that the Congress's strong stand and strong support, they know, of the American people, and the fact that all of the Jewish community basically stood together behind the position and even the support for the legislation is one manifestation of that, but there's much more obviously involved.
Oh, so it's not just Israel being against it. It's so many high officials here being skeptical about it. That's true,
and
right?
You know,
right.
You still have right. Overwhelming support in the Congress, right. Even for the legislation, despite the administration's opposition to it.
Right. And they know it. I mean, the White House feels that pressure probably daily.
Exactly. That's I know. Right. I agree. That's one of the points that, right. that comes into this situation. And also, you know, Kerry meets with the Palestinians. They reject his proposals on security right. and other arrangements. See the Jordanians coming out and saying, listen, we support Israel's stand, not the Palestinians, on the Jordan Valley. We want Israeli troops there. You know, so many things happen. You know,
Bibi had
what influences a particular decision.
Right.
But the discussions, the fact that the secretary went out there and they talked about the interim deal, and what's important now is that they're both focusing on the final deal. And there, I hope there will be no difference about the termination of its military nuclear capacity, that what we want to see the outcome to be, and what must be if this deal is to have been effective at all.
Bibi had a pretty magnanimous statement coming out and saying he's ready for a historic peace deal, but I guess he had nothing to lose, especially with the PA rejecting everything right and left.
He said that Israel's ready for an historic peace, and that and emphasized why Israel must be able to defend itself because of that. You know, the Palestinians are in very bad shape. There are a lot of concerns that are rising with the increase in violence, 65% increase in Jerusalem, elsewhere, the rise of this presence of this al-Qaeda-affiliated group, the proximity of thousands of terrorists, i.e. in Syria, or let alone Hezbollah and Hamas, but I'm talking about in Syria, who can easily come into Jordan. They cross back and forth into the border and then into the West Bank. So there are a lot of concerns that the Palestinians have to deal with as well. And there was an effort, clearly, to cover the differences in their press conference, even though Israel's disappointment on the Iranian issue is still very clear and still very relevant. I think that Secretary Kerry came with some ideas, not a proposal yet, a bridging proposal stuff, but ideas to help move the talks forward. And it seems Netanyahu is anxious and wants to see that happen. I think it's important in terms of some of the other changes in the region as well. But they see this embolden Iran. That undermines the chance for peace.
Right. Anybody take responsibility for the senior Hezbollah commander who was killed in Beirut this week?
Well, it's interesting that the initial reaction, of course, was that Israel was responsible. This is a very key guy in the Hezbollah structure. This is the guy who concocted a lot of their weapons, and a really serious guy, Alankis. And he was their technology and arms chief. So they first blamed Israel, which is a knee-jerk reaction. The most serious people recognized that this was an outgrowth of Hezbollah's activities in Syria. Now, during the night, some of the leaders there were accusing Saudi Arabia of being behind it. Israel denied any involvement, and usually they would just shut up, but the very fact that they denied it, I think you could take as a serious repudiation of the charge.
Interesting. So Saudi Arabia, not just politically and with words, are getting more involved. They may be taking action at this point.
Well, that doesn't mean that they acted. It means that they may have helped facilitate financially some of these things. And they're very involved. Listen, they have hundreds of guys fighting in Syria whom they don't want to see come home. They are perhaps even more vocal than Israel in some respects about their disappointment with the agreement, but a one-sided disappointment. Israel and Netanyahu have tried to talk about how you can take constructive steps. They're just very angry. They felt they were left out of the process. They feel that the Sunni-Shiite divide is so great that they feel that Iran is being empowered, and the fear that they will have hegemony. Iran yesterday said they're going to reach out next to Saudi Arabia, that they're going to send delegations into the UAE, and they want to rebuild relationships there. But, you know, for the Saudis, this is, in some sense, even a bigger issue, because they say Israel can defend itself. We can't.
Mm-hmm.
And they see the threat in even broader terms. They see it as, as I said, the battle between Sunni and Shiites over dominance. We see it played out in Yemen on their border. We see it played out in Bahrain, which is essentially on their border, as well as in their borders in the Qatif region, where Iran has been very active in exciting and stimulating the Shiite population there, which is where the oil often is also located.
Can you imagine if Saudi Arabia diplomatically, politically, and militarily announces that they're now allied with Israel?
Well, Prince Alawi, who, if you remember some of the history with him, did come out with a very strong statement. And as I said, the fact that Shimon Peres was invited to speak to this informal gathering, but still 29 Arab foreign ministers had him at a video chat, but live.
Right.
A message from Shimon Peres. Nobody walked out. They sat. They applauded him at the end. I think this is exactly a reflection of some of the changes that the developments there have brought about.
When we hear about a theft of Cobalt 60, which has the capability of making a dirty bomb. So this was in Mexico, correct? I mean, the first reaction is you have to check for terror ties, right?
Yes.
And in this case, nothing of it.
It looks more criminal. They abandoned the stuff, but, you know, this is very lethal to a person who handles it incorrectly. And the alert that went out should remind us about what the real danger of what we're allowing Iran to have. That we saw what one truckload, what concerns this had, because you could make a dirty bomb out of the material. Well, Iran, which has a systematic program of international terror, we see no discussion virtually of their global network of terror and what it would mean if they get this nuclear capacity, and why it's so important that it's not just be about Israel, and that we talk about the broader danger and get the American people to understand what this really means for Israel, for the United States, and for our interests. I met a French official this week, and, you know, they talk about it in very different terms. They, of course, upset about how this has happened, but they look at the jihadist threat from Mali and Libya to Yemen. And they see the growth of these forces and Iran's role behind much of it. And then you think about what if they got hold of this shipment of potential nuclear weapon components. And in fact, Iran is getting much more than that. If they're going to have 7 tons, and during the course of this, they're allowed to add to it, according to the article by Schultz and Kissinger, even though at the end of the 6 months, they're supposed to be back to where they started. But this is, what if it abrogates? What if it breaks down in the middle? What happens then?
Right.
And when the Iranians start showing their true colors.
Right. To simplify it for someone like me, if one truck can cause this kind of panic, imagine what type of a bedlam Iran has the capability of...
Exactly the point.
It's right. No, I know that's your point. I'm just saying, like
that
that sums it up. Imagine this type of reaction to one truck, and in a non-terror case, one truck.
In the end, thank God.
Yeah,
could have been in Hezbollah's presence in Mexico is very great. It's their one of their jumping off points into the United States, including tunnels under the border from Mexico, including all sorts of illicit activities, smuggling people, weapons, drugs. A whole range of activities that they're involved in Mexico to, as an operational base against the United States for Iran.
Has Syria renewed poison gas attacks?
We'll have to see. There is that report that yesterday they did, and we will only know soon. But, you know, there's been an escalation in the attacks. You saw the arm attacks. They say now that 126,000 people have been killed. They talk about war crimes, talk about other charges, but if it's true, it will be very difficult to justify that with the agreement that was reached. So, but it's too easy to make the charge. It may not be true. Maybe a way to try to rally the West. What is true is that there are facilities that the inspectors have not gotten to because they're in conflict zones.
See, I'm just wondering if it's true. Is it much easier for them to do it under the radar only because it's not an issue? It seems like just it's not a front page issue right now at this moment. So if it was true, they'd be able to get away with it because no one's focused on it the way they were a couple of months ago.
Well, they are very International Chemical Weapons Organization and the IAEA or others are focused on it. The problem they had is that nobody was willing to take the stuff,
the
chemical weapons, and dispose of it. Now the United States is working on a system to do it at sea and then dump it in international waters. But first of all, they have to get it all, and the deadline was next June, and they're saying now already that they may not be able to meet the deadline that was established.
Has Egypt officially declared the Muslim Brotherhood a terror organization?
Has Egypt?
Yeah.
Yes.
And that happened this week, right?
It happened this past week.
And the reason I say it is because the Muslim Brotherhood essentially was the government of Egypt till very recently, right?
Not essentially. It was.
Yes,
and still wants to be. And Morsi, who still retains very broad support. We shouldn't think that the backing. Right now, the government has and the army's new constitution, which would enshrine their role more, I think, al-Sisi does want to run for president, despite his previous statements to the contrary. So the situation in Egypt is very serious. You still have demonstrations, though they're much smaller, because they've outlawed essentially the Muslim Brotherhood party, and they have imprisoned much of the leadership, which I certainly think is valid and may not be a step towards democracy. But right now in the region, we have to realize And I think that there are U.S. officials who do recognize this and agree that you can't impose Jeffersonian democracy on countries that have such complex setups and situations like Libya. I mean, Syria. Syria can't be a democracy. It's going to break up into regional factions, or they'll continue fighting. But you have Kurds, Alawites, Christians. I mean, these guys don't have a Syrian identity. They're identified as in Yemen by their religious affiliation, tribes, etc.
But the West is never going to learn that lesson.
That's the problem. We always try to look at it through our eyes instead of theirs, to understand what they're saying from their perspective. If you understand what the Iranians are really mean by what they say, look at the red lines in the last week by every leader from all the different aspects of government, parliament, Khamenei, etc. And they draw red lines, and they mean those red lines. Like that they will never give up enrichment, like that they will not give up their Iraq plant and the others. So we will see what the negotiations bring and why the sanctions, which do remain in place, and Treasury Department, I have to say, does a good job in enforcing them. But if the message to Europeans and others is that you better get in line and you want to be at the head of the line, because if you at the end of the line, you're going to miss all the good deals. So that it's the psychological barrier that gets broken, even if, in fact, the sanctions changes don't break the structure of it. Most of the tough sanctions remain in place. But if the mentality is created, it tends to snowball.
I hate to ask this question. Is the Rabbi Metzger situation in Israel, is this going to be a headline-grabbing story? Or, unfortunately, in Israel, they're so used to stories like this, it's going under the radar at this point.
Well, you know, people are skeptical because despite the fact that there are so many arrests, there very rarely are there convictions, as we saw again with Mr. Lieberman, who's here in the United States and involved in discussions in Washington with top officials. So the credibility of the charges has been greatly diminished. Olmert just got off one of the charges, though there are still cases pending against him. But they also love to knock the chief rabbinate.
Right.
And so this obviously gets a lot of coverage, a lot of visibility, and, you know, he's innocent until proven otherwise.
Yeah, that's for sure. But finally, by the way, another example of something that you have told us over the years. We had the mayor of Jersey City here yesterday, Stephen Fulop, who you know in his mid-30s is one of the rising stars on the political scene. And again, observant, not observant, background, not background, everybody has an amazing opportunity to really represent our people well, and that's something that he's doing with great pride. And just thought I'd point that out one more time, especially on the heels of Hanukkah, when so many of us are focused on spreading the message of the miracle and talking about the beauty of our tradition. It's good to see somebody else who wears his Jewishness with great pride.
And especially now, you know, when so many people, and we see the studies that show the overwhelming preponderance of assimilation and disaffection, it isn't true. And last night at the White House Hanukkah party, we saw Ted Deutch and Nadler and others who are certainly proudly Jewish, that the members of Congress who are Jewish are by and large people who very proudly, whether they're from Memphis as one congressman I met or from other places, whose affiliation is a source of pride. And in America, it is a unique thing that your religion sometimes even can be an asset when you're running in non-Jewish areas. And
very good.
Jewish areas have become
a liability.
A liability at times because of a conflict situation. Right. But look, you know, we saw the attacks on the menorahs. We saw some really disturbing things during the past week, as well as very good things, the discoveries of in Israel, not just the Hasmonean era building, but some other things that show life in Yerushalayim back thousands of years. But at the same time, we have to look at some of these really serious challenges and take the threats of our enemies seriously. And I think to large a degree, Americans look at things and say, well, they just have to say that. They don't have to say it. They say it because they mean it. And we have to do everything to plan on that basis. And I think that there is an orientation now towards doing that. But when you know what the Iran Revolutionary Guard, you know that Khamenei is the guy in control, that all these other people are puppets and their own histories aren't so glorious, that we have to really be tough and sustain the position, and that means getting the legislation passed. I think that it's a mistake to attack the president, personalize this. This is about Iran. It's about Iran's nuclear program. We can talk about when we feel that there are mistakes made, but making this a venomous ad hominem attack is, I think, a diversion of necessary energy and does not strengthen our case.
Malcolm, we'll reconvene 2 weeks from today, please God. And a reminder, next Friday night, a week from tonight, at Parkey Synagogue in New York City.
And this week in Westchester and White Plains.
Oh!
Tuesday night.
I'm glad you reminded me. Tuesday night.
I think of White Plains.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but we'll remind our listeners, certainly. White Plains is coming
Tuesday, I think, 7:30.
There you go. Tuesday night in White Plains, and then next Friday night, Parkey Synagogue. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Thanks for joining us. Malcolm Hohnlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations.